Hello and welcome to another episode of This Particular Album is Very, Very Important to Me. I'm Deborah Tarica.
And I'm Joel Spence. This is the podcast where we ask people we love to pick an album that is very, very important to them, and here they share their memories.
Great and not so great.
And emotional connections.
Great and not so great.
And we all get to listen to it through their ears.
We did it, kind of.
Kind of.
Good job, Joel.
Thank you. Let's start with my particular song that is very, very important to me. This is Daft Punk. Do you know Daft Punk that well? Do you guys know Daft Punk?
Not super well, but
I know.
You know.
Do you?
Yeah.
Pretty well?
No. Like two songs.
Also, hello, Joel.
Oh, hi. I thought we had already gotten through that.
We did a while ago, a couple years ago. We got through it.
Night Vision. This is just real chill.
Starts with a heartbeat.
This is real ASMR-y.
Yeah. There is nothing to this song except this.
Really?
Yeah.
When is your time to listen to this song?
It's on my list, my playlist, which I have on the nose called chill. So it just pops up like it's great on a plane.
Yeah. We love our plane music on this podcast. We really love it. We talk about our albums. Do you have a plane album?
Do you get anxiety when you're flying?
I listen to a lot of like white noise. Like I have an app called Relax where I just listen to white noise, and then I have those these new Bose earbuds that really flood your, probably are ruining my hearing, but flood me with sound.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
I have ASMR, so I like to listen to a little tapping on wood.
Really?
Little papers rubbing together. I love tapping. I love papers rustling. I love this feeling, like the sound of like a hairbrush going through the hair.
Do you, this is not, I don't think I have that connection with ASMR, but the sound of tap shoes for me is like the best.
Does it put you to sleep? Like,
no.
I
just love, like, you saying the tapping on wood, but it like, or like the right high heel on wood. Like,
oh,
there's
yeah,
something
yeah.
Like, it's not anything like soothing. It's just like, especially the tap shoes. I think I just like wearing tap shoes around the house, even though I don't tap or dance, but I think it's like a childhood.
You very easily could. Tap is an easy dance to learn. It has technique, but like it's a folk dance. I once had a teacher who was like, anyone could learn tap within a month. It's a folk dance. It's meant to be easy to learn.
That's cool.
And there was one person that had been taking a class for like a month and a day. Except me.
This song is chill.
It's gone now.
Is it even gone? Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I was like,
I
can't even hear it anymore.
Yeah.
I like this choice.
This is like
for you.
Massage music.
Yeah.
This would put, I would put this on a sleep mix. Because I would definitely.
This is a really good massage song.
Listeners, we, the three of us, are all massaging each other right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, ease up, ease up, ease up. I was being given a massage, this was months ago, and she pushed my wrist, and I was dozing, and I grabbed her wrist accidentally, and I was in my head for the rest of the massage.
Oh, no.
And I at that time, I thought, I'm probably not going to, this is probably going to be my last time, because I just didn't, cost reasons, I didn't want to spend that much money anymore, but I changed my mind because of that, and I want to have one more massage with her and never touch her like that, just so she knows.
I bet that happens weird in like weird ways all the time.
I think it happens all the time.
She reacted to it. She kind of took my hand and squeezed, or just kind of pressed it gently back into the mat, and yeah. It wasn't like a grab. It was just sort of.
And you weren't. It's not like you were like boob. You know, like
yeah, no. Well, she did have wrist boobs. great set of wrist boobs.
I've always wanted to have a foot massage. I've never actually had like a real foot massage, and I went once, and I swear to God, I went in, had signed up for a foot massage. It was a massage with her feet on my fucking body.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was horrible and it was painful because I was like, my body's so sensitive. And I.
It said foot massage, but it was really, because that's, I think, Thai massage.
It was at a Thai place and I.
But it said foot massage, but it was badly
phrased. Yes. Phrased. Yeah. Oh. And like, I went back and looked at it again. I was like, no, I'm right in this. Like, there is nothing to allude to the fact that I am about to get walked. And I don't have an issue with feet. I don't give a shit. But like, all I wanted was something gentle and something where I knew like it was not going to hurt me. And then I'm too polite to go like, please stop.
Yeah.
This is horrible.
Yeah.
So I got a foot massage.
When did you know that when they started taking off their shoes?
Very early on. I think when I was, from the moment I put on a robe and I was like, why do I need a robe on for this? And then they had me lie down and I was like, oh, maybe it's just so I'm not like tense or anything like that. Or like, and then the moment her foot touched my back, I was like,
come on. Is there a difference between like a proper foot massage and what's called reflexology? Or is that, you know?
I don't know.
Reflexology is a specific, I think they tie into each other, but reflexology is a specific kind of, not to offend out there, pseudo-science-y thing of like, these are the points of your feet affect the different parts of your body.
Right.
And it can intersect with massage. Like, I feel like I've gotten massages where they'll be massaging my arch and be like, in reflexology,
this
connects to your butt.
Right. Yeah. No, that's my butt.
Oh.
Bring It On Home to Me by Sam Cooke.
Let me introduce my songs. Stop song-splaining.
This is
Songsplaining by Sondheim.
I would watch that. I would go see that.
Sounds like it's on HBO.
Bring It On Home to Me by Sam Cooke. About leaving me behind. Bring it to me. I feel like this is another one where I'm like, I can't believe it's taken me this long to do a Sam Cooke song, but I think it's because I've been just holding on to it. And I'm ready. I'm ready to put out there. And I couldn't decide which song. But this one.
Oh, Joel is dancing. Wow. I only hurt
myself. Bring it to me. I just love Sam Cooke. I think his voice is one of the most beautiful voices in existence. And
did he sing Cupid?
Yeah.
Oh.
He sang Cupid, and he sang You Send Me, and just a million songs. A million songs. And, are you guys fans?
This whole era of music, this is made for, like, satellite radio. If a channel with just this music, I'll be fine.
Yeah. Soul-ish?
I guess it's this era of
soul. But, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Is it generally, 60s?
Early, yeah.
Did you guys see the documentary? It's called The Two Killings of Sam Cooke.
Is he the one that was killed in a hotel room?
Yeah.
Oh boy, I want to see this.
There was some shady shit.
Oh no, and, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he was 33
what?
When he died. And it's like,
I didn't know any of this.
It bums me out so, what he would have done, he was like fighting the music industry and trying to control his own music, like all this stuff. But what I can't even imagine like what he would have come up with if he had more time. To treat you right, but you stayed out.
All right, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Hello, listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. If you're digging this podcast, please, please, please go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review. Deborah and I love doing this show, and good reviews help us continue to bring fun guests and great albums to you. Special thanks to those of you who already have rated and reviewed. You know who you are, we know who you are, and we're looking forward to reading some new ones. And now, back to the program. Our guest, Rachel Bloom, is an actress, singer, songwriter, writer, and comedian hailing from Manhattan Beach, California. She created and starred in the TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and stars in the movie Most Likely to Murder. Rachel Bloom, thank you so much for joining us.
Where's that bio from?
I wrote it.
Oh, it's great.
But no,
it's good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I always just piece it together from Wikipedia and people's websites and stuff.
No, that's better than some bios that... some reps have written for me, so it's very concise.
Feel free to take it if you want. Are you from Manhattan Beach?
I am. It's great. Everything about that was false. No, I am. I'm from Manhattan Beach, California.
I didn't know that.
I don't know about the truth of Manhattan Beach, but when I first moved here, I was driving. I lived in Orange at my grandmother's house. She wasn't there anymore, but I was living at her house in Orange. And I was just driving up the beaches just to see what everything was like. Manhattan seemed pretty cool to me.
It's beautiful. So the shape of it is, it's a picturesque beach community. When I grew up there, it was like middle class to upper middle class. Now is like...
Upper
1% class. Yeah. I think it's one of the... because it's... It's. I think they're starting to call the South Bay Silicon Beach because a lot of stuff is moving down to the South Bay and El Segundo and Manhattan Beach and stuff. And so now, like, the average per capita income there is, like, insane. But when I went there, it was still, like, really, really rich and but still had this and still has this kind of laid-back surfer culture, which is why I never felt like I fit in there. Like, I am so the opposite of that. I'm actually more of that now than I was growing up, but...
listeners, she arrived with a surfboard.
Yeah. what's up? Where can I hang my wetsuit? Actually, one of our ADs on Crazy X went surfing every other morning, and he was in amazing shape, and I never understood it. I've never been surfing. I'm terrified.
I'm terrified.
I don't trust water to hold me up.
No, I would love to surf. I think that would be the coolest thing in the world. I like the ocean a lot. That is, I can think of a lot of things scarier.
The odds are good that you're going to like slam your face down on the board at one point.
Yeah. Oh, I'm more afraid of drowning, like just fully like being pulled under.
Yeah, that happens
because
too.
Because I guess I never even got as far as the idea that I could stand up on a surfboard. I'll get to that and then I'll start freaking out about that part.
There was I went to a very good public school. There was surf PE. Kids would get up at like 6 a.m. and go to surf PE.
That's amazing.
In retrospect, I should have taken advantage of it. Just like I should have taken advantage of the fact that I had free education for 18 years. Do you ever have, I have dreams now where I'm back in high school, but specifically because I go, oh my God, I had free education and I didn't take advantage of it. Now I'm back in my high school. and they don't know. It takes them a while in the dream for them to realize that I already graduated.
Yeah.
But then I start failing because I realize that school's boring.
Mm.
Which tells you that it's okay that you didn't take advantage
of it. Yeah. I feel guilty. But anyway.
I have some of those thoughts.
Like I took physics and I fucked off. And it's like, why? You learned how the universe works.
Yeah.
Why did you fuck off? That was free.
But you have, it's part of it. It's
of
part
course,
of it. And it's the
I
same
know.
Thing of like not taking the surf class. Like something in your gut was like, hell no.
No, and also that. It's a whole cultural thing. Like the cool kids surfed and the uncool kids like me listened to show tunes. And I was with my family and myself, just a like an East Coaster. I just felt like a New Yorker. I always felt like I belonged on the East Coast, and I moved to the East Coast, and I was 100% right.
Mm, yeah.
And it's only in later years that I now feel like I more fit in with Southern California. But the surfer culture permeates everything there. Mm. And it's like a great example is I remember, because I did theater, of course, and I remember this one guy seeing the script for a play I was doing, and he went, wait. He looked at all the lines I highlighted. He went, wait, so you like... You didn't have to do this. You like want to do this? And I went, yeah. And he goes, why would you like do that to yourself?
That's amazing.
He just didn't get why I would create more work. And then we did Into the Woods. And I think that same person was like, so did you guys like write that? Like he didn't understand what theater was.
He probably now at this age is like, I should have taken a theater class.
I guess so. You're right.
Fucking blew it.
You're right. Nah, he's probably not. It's fine.
Okay, so.
So yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, what particular, Rachel Bloom, what particular album is very, very important to you?
So this is Assassins, the original cast of Assassins by Stephen Sondheim. So, oh, yeah. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know what's happening, this is a kind of fantastical musical, one would might say a pseudo-song cycle about the various real and attempted presidential assassins throughout American history. As you can see, this is the presidential theme, but fucked up. Hey. So this is a really important album to me because this really, this and probably the album Chicago bridged the gap between the frivolous parts of musical theater that I liked and my intellectual pursuits.
You should have paid attention to physics, bro.
Don't know what to do. I always loved musical theater. I only listened to show tunes. It was one of the many things that got me really made fun of in middle school. I was really an outcast. But then, in eighth grade, we had a theater teacher in my middle school who, he had been teaching a Shakespeare elective. And so you'd take this thing called the wheel, which was like every trimester in my middle school, you'd go to a different kind of elective. And so he taught a version of the wheel where every trimester he would do a different Shakespeare play, like a truncated Shakespeare play.
That's
so
cool.
So, and everyone loved him as a teacher, and his name is Mr. Jim Amberg, and he's still works in theater, and he lives in Oregon, and he's the best. And so he started to make theater cool in this beach community because everyone loved him and people started really to like the plays, and suddenly the popular surfer kids were saying Shakespeare. So when I was in eighth grade, he started a musical theater class, year-round musical theater class, and I lost my mind because, like, this wasn't happening. There weren't musicals going on at my middle school.
And you were already a big fan.
Huge fan, and okay. I was doing community theater, but I'd have to find little pockets of doing community theater, and like, it was not a mainstream pursuit. But eighth grade, we did the musical, and I was... In middle school, not only unpopular, but I had also had pretty serious, what I now realize to be onset obsessive compulsive disorder. So, like, not only was I made fun of, but I also had, like, OCD that made me very in my head, and I imagine outwardly even weirder than middle schoolers usually are, and
sure.
kind of fed each other. Anyway, so this musical theater class started, and I don't know if it happened to correspond with the end of puberty and my hormones settling down, but whatever happened, my life got better because of this musical theater class, because suddenly all of the work that I'd been doing while people were busy having friends, like all of the work that I'm doing with acting and singing suddenly paid off because I got the lead in this play. We had a musical theater showcase where I sang Little Girls from Annie, and it was really good, and suddenly the popular kids started to respect me, and they even started apologizing to me, which was really cool.
That's crazy.
Because the year before, they'd full on, as a joke, paid the most popular kid in school to ask me out, like as a prank.
Real? That
yeah, like a bad
That's
movie.
Real?
Yeah, like a bad movie.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it was bad. Everybody's got the right to be different. Even though at times they go to extremes, aim for what you want a lot.
Everybody gets a shot. Everybody's got the right to their dreams.
I think my connection to musical theater was very, like, escapist. I like musical theater. I was raised with it. My mom played piano. My grandfather was, like, an amateur theater actor, and I've just been listening to show tunes since I was little, and I liked the bouncy, happy, but kind of sexy escapism. And as I got into high school, I started to kind of want more out of it. And there was a very light part of me that loved happy musicals, but then there was a very dark part of me that was, like, made fun of, had been dealing with some pretty bad mental illness, some really bad bullying, and so I loved, like, Welcome to the Dollhouse. Like, I started really liking dark shit because it mirrored how I felt inside and was so not what I saw outside of an open-air high school by the beach where everyone's super sunny and
happy. And you're supposed to be happy.
Yeah, and there's no neuroses, right? It's sunny all the time.
Yeah.
And so I started getting into, like, musicals that were darker, and it was like, this is who I am, this kind of weird clash of light and dark. And then... my junior year of high school, we did Into the Woods.
got the right to some sunshine.
Everybody!
Not the sun, but maybe one of its beams.
One of its beams.
Rich man, poor man, black or white. Pick your apple, take a bite. Everybody, just hold tight to your dreams. Everybody's got the right to their dreams.
So when you do Sondheim, it's a whole other level of you know, learning songs. Kind of script interpretation. It's dense, which is kind of what he's known for. And we had a music. Oh, there's going to be a gunshot. Just as a warning. Yeah. Okay.
that was so thoughtful.
In the song where they're talking about like how great it is to have a gun.
Yeah.
The first time the gunshot went off in that, when she accidentally fires, I was just out walking my dog, listening to it in my earphones, and it like terrified me.
It's really
I was not. It gave me a good jump scare.
Then the country goes a little wrong. Every now and then a madman.
So we got this music director in for the shows who directed. He'd worked on the previous year. He worked on when we did Little Shop. But he came into the Woods, and it was kind of his baby. Basically, it was this guy. I'll call him Patrick because I don't want to throw him under the bus. But anyone who knows me knows who I'm talking about. His name is Patrick, and Patrick was only about a year or two older than I was, but he was this, like, musical prodigy that someone, basically the TA of the class knew because her daughter had done shows with him, and he was from the San Gabriel Valley, which is where West Covina is, which is, as you'll hear, it's basically, spoiler alert, he's one of the reasons my show is set in West Covina. Because, so, basically, what happened was... So he was this kind of musical prodigy that we brought in, and Sondheim was his baby. Like, I remember, like, even during Little Shop of Horrors, he was reading the recent Sondheim biography that had just come out.
Johnny lived with a grace and glitter, kind of like the lives he lived on stage. Died in a barn in pain and bitter, 27 years of age. Why did you do it, Johnny?
So... Into the Woods was kind of like for him to spread his musical director wings. And he was really only like 18 years old. Anyway, I got the part of the witch, and which meant spending a lot of time alone with him. Because our director, the actual director of the program, was a little not as present, like not as much there. So he was kind of the de facto director of the show. And I ended up spending time alone with him. And I fell head over heels in love with him. And the way that I did was from analyzing Sondheim. So he told me that Into the Woods was really based on this Bruno Bettelheim book, The Uses of Enchantment, and I bought it, and I started underlining and highlighting, and I still have this copy, and I brought it, and I went, this is all the stuff I've been highlighting, and he's like, oh my God, I can't believe you bought that book. And so I started to get really into Sondheim because he was in love with Sondheim, and we started talking about the symbolism of Into the Woods and the symbolism of Assassins, and this is what musically he's doing here, and in Into the Woods it goes, I mean, we really should have done Into the Woods, but it in Into the Woods it goes, there's this bean theme where it goes do 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 do, and then later it goes people make mistakes, which is the basically the inverse of that. Just nerdy music shit like that. And so I bought Assassins, and I was like, my mind was blown because not only did I love it, so it was another thing I could talk about with Patrick, but it was also like another dark musical that was way darker even than Chicago or Cabaret. Yeah. This is about like murdering people. And this is around the time I also started to get very political. I'd recently watched Bowling for Columbine. And
that'll do it for anybody.
It's going to do it for you. I got really, really like left wing around this time. And I had just done a project in English class where we had to make a playlist for a book. I had a really cool English teacher. And so I did... Michael Moore's Whose Country Is This Anyway? And I made a playlist of all political show tunes for it.
Amazing.
So I was like trying to like marry the very intellectual parts of my mind and political parts with like mostly frivolous musical theater to do in my own
way.
So I just really like fell in love with this album, and I fell in love with, because like I had what I now realize it is kind of depression. It's general like mood fluctuations. And so, like, this, I could get home and I could play this and fucking get angry. What part are we at now? Let's see. Oh, yeah. So, like, I could, like, USA, like John Wilkes Booth being like, I'm gonna kill Lincoln. Yeah. Like, it's an angry fucking album, but also it was another way for me to get close to this guy and be like, oh my God, I've been listening to a lot of Assassins. He's like, oh my God. Like, I remember him being like, oh, when those first notes come on, it's such a way for me to release my anger. And I was like, fuck yeah.
I love this.
But that is, I feel like that's how I got into, I feel like the same with you, like, so many passions that I've had and so many things have been because I'm like, yeah, this guy's into it. Yes. Like, I'm not like super proud of it, but how, you know, it's that or through friends.
How surrender is not the end. Tell him
how the country. There's this book that I read called Unrequited, which is all a book just about unrequited love, especially from a woman's point of view, and how, like, anyway, it's written by a therapist who did at one point, like, stalk her ex-boyfriend, and she says that, like, a lot of times when we become completely obsessed or consumed with someone, it's aspirational. Mm-hmm. It's, they're a person that you want to be. And in this case in high school, it was so true. And so, like, it makes sense that you would glean some really good things from having a crush, because it is aspirational. They're where you are. They're the type of person you want to be. Or you just kind of want to, like, bathe yourself in everything about that person.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Never, never, never. No, the country is not what it was. Damn my soul, if you must, let my body turn to dust. Let it mingle with the ashes of the country. Let them curse me to hell. Leave it to history to tell. What I did well, and I did it for my country. Let them cry, dirty traitor. They will understand it later.
The first time you heard this was just the recording of it. Did you see it first, or did you?
No, it was the recording, and, you know, I'm remembering, I think it was a birthday present. Yep, there we go. Another gunshot. There's going to be a lot of gunshots. No one really stabs a president to death or runs them over with a car. Everyone just shoots them in the head.
Right.
It was either given to me by my friend Natasha or my friend Brendan because I was doing Into the Woods at the time. And they were like, you haven't heard Assassins yet. You have to listen to it. And I became obsessed with it. And you know what? The only time I've seen Assassins is from a bootleg DVD of the revival that my friend Brendan gave me.
Really?
Of the Broadway revival. So I've actually never seen it live.
Well, we have a surprise for you.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Victor Garber, you're here.
Places, everybody. Places.
Damn you, Johnny. You paved the way for other madmen to make us pay. Lots of madmen have had.
I was not familiar with it before you picked it, but I enjoyed it a lot. I liked it more than I thought I would. I like musical theater. I'm not a humongous musical theater fan. Like, I like the ones I like, if that makes sense.
I think when musical theater is good, people like it.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's bad. Or a lot of it is very dated because the golden age was the 50s through the 70s.
That's fair, yeah.
So when you ask people to like musical theater, you're asking them a lot of times to either like something that you have to have already kind of loved musicals since you were a kid to appreciate, or something that's just like dated.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Hamilton was such a success, is because it's a good show and it's a good album written with a modern sensibility. Mm-hmm. And it was a good gateway into musical theater.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
I'm just so, I think that's so cool that you got a class devoted to the thing that you loved more than anything
in
high school. What a I'm trying to think of what that class would have been.
Didn't know what it was for me until maybe comedy. Mine would be puppies.
Puppy class?
Yeah, it would be like, you get to come in, you have like an hour to play with puppies and take care of them.
But and what then a you great go. Fucking class.
That'd like, be great. Yeah. I would love, that's the class I want to take.
I recently read a book, not to brag, talking about the future of education and how it should be much more about how to learn and learning on your feet now, because by the time you learn, if you're learning coding, that might all change in 10 years.
Yeah.
And we all have to start learning to like reinvent ourselves because technology is moving so quickly. So a class where you learn about puppies and take care of puppies that teaches you generally how to learn and how do you care for something might be more useful than
way
this
more
is
useful.
Cursive.
Yeah.
I catch his eye. I say to him, where do you think you're trying to go, boy? Whoa, boy. I say, listen, you runt, you're not pulling that stunt. No gentleman pushes their way to the front. I say, move to the back, which he does with a grunt, which is how I saved Roosevelt. Then, well, I'm in my seat. I get up to clap. I feel this tap. I turn this app. He says he can't see. I say, find a lap and go sit on it, which is
then
how I saved.
He started to swear. He climbed on a chair. He was aiming a gun. I was standing right there, so I pushed it as hard as I could in the air, which is how I saved.
This is everyone giving testimony on how they saved. A guy tried to shoot FDR.
I don't know if I ever knew that, and then killed the mayor instead.
Killed Mayor Cermak of Chicago, Giuseppe Zangara, an immigrant.
Was he an anarchist or something?
No, he was an immigrant who had chronic stomach problems and somehow blamed them on
FDR?
On FDR.
Wow.
It is fascinating, the fixation that comes with targets.
Yeah.
In that way. Like, that's... to blame... I guess I can see, like, looking to the president to blame things, who the person who's supposed to fix things, but, like, it is crazy.
Well, and the whole purpose of this show, and the reason I loved it, because it's thematically advanced, but also, like, simple enough for a 16, 17-year-old to understand, is it's the fucked up of the American dream. The whole, the theme, the thematic statement of the show is everybody's got the right to be happy. Mm-hmm. And that's what we teach you in America. Hold
Follow
tight
your
to
dreams.
Your dreams. Yeah. Anyone can do this. And that's why the gun song, which will be coming up, is like, anyone, all you have to do is move your little finger, you can change the world. Mm-hmm. And because that's what we're taught. You can change the world. You can, you know, you can be the change you see in the world. And these people who went to assassinate presidents
took it to an extreme.
Basically bought into the idea of the American dream. And so I think the struggle of the show is do we blame them or do we blame the American dream itself? Which overlapped with my curriculum of The Great Gatsby junior year. So
maybe we can't have it all?
No. Well, and these people are very American and they're saying, this is how I saved FDR. It's them telling the story of like, I single-handedly did this, I single-handedly did that.
Just lucky we were there. To think if I let him get up closer.
I saw right away he was insane. Oh, this is my husband, we're from Maine.
He told me to sit, but I said no, sir.
This makes a vacation a real success.
Are you with the press?
Yes.
Oh God, I'm a mess.
Some left-wing foreigner, that's my
guess. It wasn't the best.
You know, looking back, when I was in high school, I had huge dreams as like that sort of yearn to be an artist, to affect things, to make a change in this world. So I can completely relate to just wanting to make an impact on the world that would affect things.
And it's about, this is about feeling powerless.
Yeah.
Where I don't have control, but you know what I have control over is I can buy a gun and literally become the most important person in the world. And when you're in high school, I mean, you feel very powerless. And this was really, I also listened to this, I mean, Columbine had happened, but this was obviously very, very pre all the school shootings. I think it would be a very different listening experience for a high schooler now.
Yeah.
It was, even just listening to that one song was like, yeah, like, it did, like, hit me in a way with what gun violence is right now, and just the simplicity of like, yeah, just twitch your finger.
It's powerlessness. I can gain power with this thing.
And I've been really kind of, it's not obsessed, but so this is such an easy take, but trying to explain trolls on the internet, and I thought it's just because they feel like they don't have any power, and this is the easiest way to feel like they do. It's lower stakes. No one's getting killed, but
it makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
it all comes from it's the taking status through cruelty.
Yeah,
if you're trolling on the internet, you're hot take. You're probably very unhappy.
Yeah.
And what amazing power to tweet something at like a celebrity and have them then like respond to you.
Yeah.
What a
to know that you hurt their feelings or to know that you like affected them. Yeah. Yeah. Have you? I'm assuming we're all probably on similar pages about guns and gun ownership and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I have about 16.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Someone's ahead of us. Because I have 24.
Well, and the guns here, they're all over the walls.
Yeah.
They're forming the shape of a heart.
Weirdly. The actors are leaning on them.
It's easy for me as like a liberal secular Jew who's only ever lived in Southern California, New York City, to say, I don't get the gun thing. Yeah. It's just not part of my culture. I'm not anti-Second Amendment. I'm not anti-handgun. Like, I think a lot of people in the debate last night, we were just watching the debate. I'm sorry for the dated reference at this point when you listen to this. But
now that Elizabeth Warren is actually president, this is crazy.
Oh, my God.
A year early?
Yeah. She was so good. They were like, get her in there. Keep your handguns or just... Why the assault rifle thing? What?
Your little finger can change the world.
I got this really great gun. Shit, where is it? No, it's really great. Wait, shit, where is it? Anyway, it's just a 38. But it's a gun. You can make a statement wrong with a gun, even if you fail it. Tells them who you are, where you stand. This one was on sale. Not the shoe. Well, actually, the shoe was too. No, that's not it. Shit, I had it there. Got it. Yeah, there it is.
And all you have to do is crook your little finger, hook your little finger around.
Shit, I shot it.
You can change the world. Simply follow through and look.
I never want to own a gun, but I was like, I think I would like shooting a gun. I think it would feel powerful and cool. And Alex and I went to the gun range downtown in LA, and it's an indoor gun range. And I was like, I was very excited because I was like, I actually think I'll be good at this too. And I fired it once and I burst into tears and we had to leave because it started to give me a panic attack. Because there was also somebody in the next stall that was shooting like a Dirty Harry style gun that was like so loud. We were wearing the headphones and stuff, but it was like, it was so scary to me and it had such a physical effect that we had to leave.
Oh my God.
And I would still be like curious to try it in like an open air space area, but I think my physical reaction to it, like the actual way it felt firing, like it was bad. It was bad for me. And it's like, I don't want to shoot a gun again.
Does it hurt?
It didn't feel good. Like, and it didn't,
this
like,
is the most, like, this
my...
is like a conservative. Sorry, this is like literally a conservative doing impression of liberal of like, I fired a gun once and I cried, and me saying, does it hurt? Like, I realize we're a sketch right now. I just have to point that out.
Oh, well, I mean, I can tell you about the therapy I needed for.
Oh, does it hurt? Did you put some
chemo? The acupuncture you class.
And then I saw a healer.
And surfed the rest of the day away.
Gregor, my husband, wanted at one point to get a gun for the apocalypse because we live in Southern California and there's going to be a big earthquake, civilization is going to collapse, which I keep telling everybody and no one listens to me. Because did you grow up here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wait, where'd you grow up?
Here, like in LA and Hollywood.
Okay, so did you, you were here during Northridge.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so was, so you fear that earthquake and yeah, you start to think, my parents took me to see the Northridge damage.
Did they?
Which I have on video. Yeah, and when you see a mattress out of a window and you see every brick building like completely collapsed,
yeah.
You start to think about, okay, I want to live in a house or apartment building that's retrofitted. So I tell all my friends basic earthquake safety because they're all from the East Coast. So just so anyone's listening, earthquake safety. If you live in Southern, if you live in California, well, really anywhere on the West Coast,
yeah.
Really should be anywhere.
Yeah.
But don't sleep with your head under a window. That's how mm-hmm. a lot of injuries happen, broken glass. Don't sleep with anything heavy over your bed.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens when you're asleep, stay in bed.
That's changed.
I know,
yeah, it used to
but
be
because
right?
You just shouldn't be running around trying to find the kind of
used to be doorway.
Yeah, the doorway thing is kind of you just don't run around in an earthquake. And then there was a whole article in LA Weekly years ago about the types of houses. So you don't want to live in an apartment building. Basically, anything built between the 50s and the 70s is the shoddiest workmanship because it was in the post-war boom. And so those things where you have kind of a very, very thin beams holding up the apartment building over an outdoor parking lot, that's really bad. And really,
there's a lot of those.
Those will snap.
On this block here,
snap like twigs. A lot of those hillside houses are gone.
Yeah.
Absolutely gone, which is why like I live in the fucking flats.
Yeah.
Like I don't care about prestige or whatever. Anything else I'm missing? Oh, get down, stop dropping. Go, no, that's a fire. Get under a desk, grab the desk leg and cover your neck, right?
Well, be close to, it's like if you can be next to your bed, your best place is like next to your bed. Next to, if something heavy falls where something else can block it. So like,
right.
It wouldn't necessarily be under this table. It would be like, I don't know. Like under, you want to get away from the anything that's like heavy that can fall on you.
Right.
I feel like, I think like, was it Elias did a whole like podcast series or KPCC or something?
I've been listening
whole,
to it
like,
called The Big One. Yeah.
I can't listen. I won't do it.
It's actually pretty practical and hopeful.
Okay.
Because the last episode is, so the first episode is what the big one would be like now.
Yeah.
The second one is like what the big one would be like if we actually implement proper earthquake safety measures, which is a fantasy, but it leaves you on kind of a hopeful note.
Everyone gets like a slide. Everyone immediately slides.
Yeah. Everyone like actually just gets a slide apropos of nothing.
That'd be amazing.
No, there's like an early warning system that'll beep on your phone that tells you like 20 seconds until an earthquake. There's you have an earthquake kit. You already have a designated meeting place, which should just be your house.
I think
theoretically.
It is. Yeah.
I think my, at one point we'd said UCB, but then we were like, what are we doing?
Yeah. I guess it depends on where you are in respect to your house. Like, if it's easier to get to, but if you just don't know, so you have to have one meeting place.
I'm just going to meet the house. Oh. Well, this is unworthy of your love, so this is the love song of Assassins, sung by Squeaky Fromm, who tried to kill Ronald Reagan.
Ford.
It was Ford, I'm sorry. And Mark David Chapman, who tried to kill Reagan because he's obsessed with Jodie Foster. So both of them are maddeningly in love. So this song is how I felt about that guy. So I would sing this song and like imagine that we were singing it. Like when she's like, she goes like,
fucked up.
She goes like, I would crawl belly deep. Wind and devil. Let's see what she says. Hold on. Charlie,
take my blood and my body for your love. Let me feel fire. Let me drink poison. Tell me to tear my heart in two. If that's what you want me to do, I am unworthy of your love. Charlie,
your love. It's so self-hating and self-flagellating. And at the end of it on stage, she carves swastika under her forehead.
I just imagine that happening.
Yeah, it's like, really, it's really.
Without knowing that was ever going to happen, that's how I always pictured it ending.
So I would like sing this because this is how obsessive love felt and still feels. And I know that
musicals
now.
Musicals are so good for obsessive love.
They're so
too.
Good.
They're so good.
Because they glorify obsessive love without saying this is wrong, which is also all of Western art and culture. Yeah. No one's ever like, it says like, I'm obsessed, therefore it must be something holy. Very few things are like, you're obsessed. Calm down. It's your body, lizard brain trying to reproduce. It's not conducive to what's going to make you happy.
I'll find a way to learn your love way. your love to me. Your love to me.
So we like got closer and closer. I had a boyfriend at the time, technically, but like this guy, Patrick, and I, you know, he was a teacher, but I just want to say, like, teacher for hire, didn't officially teach at the school. I was, at that point, 17, and he was 18 and a half or whatever. So we kissed for the first time at the cast party of Into the Woods.
My God.
And then we started hooking up in his van around town.
Let's just say, it's Patrick Stewart,
right? Yeah, it's Patrick Stewart. We started hooking up his van around town. He was the first guy to see my tits.
Engage.
And then he basically was on, he was a drummer by trade in addition to being a music director and a brilliant pianist and singer.
Of course
he was a drummer.
He
went on tour with actually a pretty well-known music artist. I won't say who it is, but I don't know why. He went on tour, went to Japan and came back from Japan. And like, when he went to Japan, he was like, when I get back, like, I want to make you my girlfriend. Like, the show's over now. Like, we can make this work. I can, like, drive in. Like, I can. And I didn't, like,
sleep in his van if you needed to.
And so he got back from Japan, and, like, he didn't call me the whole time he was in Japan. And meanwhile, I was in Oliver, a community theater production of Oliver, where I played Nancy, where she sings a song called As Long As He Needs Me, because she's in a physically abusive relationship.
Yep.
And every night I sang that song, I just thought of Patrick.
Mm.
And he came back and
you were grooming yourself
said to me in his van, I've changed a lot.
Oh my God.
And I'm not ready for a relationship, but I'm still physically attracted to you. So can we still hook up? So we'd occasionally make out. Nothing further really happened.
Good
we'd
for
occasionally
you.
Make out.
Good
well, no, not
no,
good. No, it's not
for nothing further going happening. I'd say good for you.
Well, he tried to undo my pants, I remember. And I was like, oh, I haven't done this before. And he's like, you know what? Let's keep it like...
No, I respect you.
He said
much.
Like no strings. Again, this guy's like a year and a half older than that. But I found out later he'd done a ton of drugs. And that's like really what it was.
I learned in Japan how to unbutton pants.
Yeah, it was... because streaming and musical theater are like... They're monsters. They're fucking monsters. Because they're unicorns. They've been, you know, accused their whole lives of like, are you sure you like women? So they feel like they have something to prove.
Yeah.
And their intelligence and their talent makes them fucking sexy, and they get away with a lot. And this guy especially was quite smart, and knew he was smart, which a lot of guys in musical theater do. So then it was this weird thing where like I got another boyfriend, but like I was still in love with him, and then he came back to fucking musically direct my fucking senior year production, which he shouldn't have fucking done.
Mm.
Agreed. That's a real piece of shit.
Yeah. I've told him later how much it fucked me up, and he's like, I had no idea that you were in love with me, and I was like, really though, dude? And then in college, I went to NYU, and he was on tour with another band, and he started like hitting on me again when I was in college, and I was still kind of in love with him, and he was gonna come to New York, and I was gonna lose my virginity to him. And then it didn't quite happen, and it was awful.
And that man's name was Dan Greger.
Oh, it wasn't Patrick Stewart.
I am going to the Lordy. I am so glad. I am going to the Lordy.
This one felt like it had nice hooks with each one.
Well, because this is a pastiche, so this is rooted in a classic sounding song. And that's also why I love Assassins is, I mean, it's the same reason I loop it in with like Chicago and Cabaret is because like it's these old styles that make you feel good, but like dark versions.
Yeah.
So this is like... based on, in real life, Charles Guiteau, who assassinated Garfield, really did a cakewalk, which was the big dance of the time, walking up his execution steps. So this is a literal cakewalk. So it's very kind of repetitive and catchy in the way a pop song of 1900-something would be.
Yeah.
Said nothing to it, I want it, I'll do it, I'm Charles J. Guiteau. Charlie.
This song always reminds me of my best friend Brendan, who is the one who gave me the bootleg of Assassins and then later directed it in his own high school. The guy who sings Guiteau in this sounds like Brendan, and I always pictured me singing the, like, said nothing to it, I want it, I'll do it, me doing that part and him playing Guiteau. I really do listen to musicals and just imagine myself in them, which I think we all do.
I think so.
When you guys listen to songs, how much of it is just listening to the song and how much of it is imagining you performing the song or in the song or dancing to the song?
Yeah, I'm always doing that.
Yeah. Not very much for me, I think. Maybe dancing, like if it's in a place where I can be dancing, like,
yeah,
but not, I don't imagine myself doing that.
Led them in prayer, said I killed Garfield, I'll make no denial, I was just acting for...
I was actually thinking about this, and this is like kind of tangential, that how envious I am that you can listen to a musical and sing along with it nicely, mm-hmm. like, and have it sound good, both of you guys, and I have to do it privately. Like, it's not, I don't mean this, like, there's no, like, shame or anything. It's just, like, I don't have a good voice, and I wish I did. That's the, like, I really wish I did.
Have you tried to take singing lessons or anything
when
like
I was
that?
A kid, I was
oh, yeah,
into
you
musical
sang tits
theater
and ass.
Stuff. I did. I sang tits and asses at a... to get into course, I was a very slow developer, like, not shy, but just very, like, what's the word? I was, like, a... I can't think, there's like, I was just, everybody else was like, wanted to shop, and I was like, still young. I was young.
Everyone else wanted to shop?
Yeah. What's
the... I think that's what I heard, too.
I did say
you
that.
You mean like you weren't...
A late bloomer.
Late bloomer.
Oh, no, got it. A late bloomer. Sorry.
Everyone wanted to shop. Got it.
Yeah.
They had the zits and the...
Yeah. And like, had and like liked boys and stuff, and I was like, I was a late bloomer with that stuff. So I was in seventh grade auditioning at my all-girls school to get into chorus, and I sang, it was just me and the music director, and I sang tits and ass.
Wow.
Because I thought that's... Because it sounded like it, not
range.
The not the words, the range fit well.
Was it good? Did you get in?
No. I think I did get in, but I think everybody got in. I don't
didn't
even
I say
know why there was.
You changed it to bits and sass.
They almost changed it to this and that in my high school.
Oh, really?
Here before I was in high school, and then like the last minute, the principal was like, "Okay, you can do tits and ass."
Whoa!
And I was like, "We're liberal." yeah.
But I wish I pictured myself doing that stuff.
I don't like, sing I just... along because I like the fantasy to be full, and I don't need to hear my own voice. I don't like... I like the sound of my singing voice, but I don't... There's like a type of musical theater person who's like, I always need to be singing, and I'm just not... I just... Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. I don't know. I think I... Because I love singing. Like, I do... Like, if I'm driving somewhere
good.
By myself, like, I... Mm-hmm. Unless I'm listening to, like... the news or something, like I'm singing along.
I think it's
and
healthy
to
sing.
Singing
yeah.
is not
oh,
reserved for
singing.
Just the people who like have musical theater
oh,
voices.
Yeah.
Like it's a part of human nature. Music yeah. is a part of us. I tell this because my husband hates singing. I mean, he's scared of singing. He's scared of rhythm. He's scared of music, despite the fact who he's married to. And I'm like, clearly someone said you had a bad voice at one point when you were five. But this is not, music is not for everyone else. It's for you too.
Yeah.
And then we talked about starting a two-person klezmer band, but he'd have to learn accordion. And he's like, the odds of me learning accordion are so slim. I'm like, you could do it.
It'd be amazing if you guys did that.
Because I want to learn violin. Mm. And
cool.
Even though I really should get better at piano, because my piano skills for how long I've been playing piano fucking suck.
That's what Joel and I were saying before you got here.
Mm.
You knew it.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up.
But I really, I'd like to have a klezmer band.
You
great
and
music.
A lot of my family. I'll introduce you to
are
people.
Are you Jewish?
I am. I'm a Sephardic Jew.
I didn't know that. Oh my God, I feel so Jewish. You know when you find out someone's Jewish?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The way you described yourself with the earthquake stuff where you're like, I'm a Jewish woman from LA, da 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 da. It
yeah.
was everything I checked off to except lived in New York.
So Sephardic from... From Spain or where? Just from like
Spain.
Fucking Spain.
From fucking Spain.
Wow, that's
Spain,
so cool.
And then that's all on my dad's side. And then my mom's side, my grandfather was from Iran. So also Sephardic on that side.
Were you bat mitzvah?
I was.
I was not.
I was. Really?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not super
late.
Authentic.
It's not too late.
I know. I thought about it. Part of what the reason I think
well, we've
about
we've got a surprise for you.
Oh my God, Victor Garber,
Rabbi Garber to you.
Oh my God. No, but part of the reason I write about being Jewish so much is it's one of the ways I explained why I was different growing up in Southern California. But then also I've been with. My husband was raised very Jewish. He was raised kind of what he calls conservadox.
Yeah.
And so
went
to Jewish school until eighth grade, kept kosher, wasn't allowed to celebrate Halloween, prayed every day. Like, so that has made me feel more Jewish. But I know that Sephardim, he always likes going to Sephardic Passover Seders because you get to have rice.
Oh, ooh, right. There's a big
that's,
food
oh my,
difference.
That's
yeah.
the Persian yeah. part.
Yeah. Yeah.
That they get to have rice on my... The other side, we don't have rice.
Yeah, so my in-laws really like going to their friend's Passover Seder, who are Sephardic, because it gives them the excuse to eat rice.
That's so funny. I do like the food much better on the Sephardic side.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
real good.
Yeah,
it's
remember you mentioning that before.
It's
yeah.
like really
that sounds great.
Good. Oh, it's so good.
I want to go.
I know.
Oh, we should have a little Seder.
Let's do it.
Have you been to Friedman's?
Oh, no, but I keep wanting to go. I know that's, like, your place.
It's my place.
Yes. Well, I've seen you post about it and stuff, and, like...
Both. We basically live there now.
I love that.
For anyone visiting Los Angeles, it's a nouveau Jew cuisine restaurant.
Would you say... I'm going back to
Assassins.
Oh, yeah, we
should Assassins go back to this musical.
All right, is this your favorite musical?
Is this my favorite musical? It's up there. It's such a, like... It's a great show. It's such a weird show. It's very non-linear. A lot of these historical characters are interacting in kind of like a way that isn't like... It's plot adjacent, but really it's a collection of scenes into a collection of songs.
Yeah.
So it's but it's up there. Yeah, I'll say it's my favorite musical.
Well, what are the other two?
That's good, yeah. I mean, I not to be fucking basic, but like Hamilton's fucking great. Like, it's really good.
I still haven't seen it.
It's quite
same here.
Good.
I need to see it, and I do.
I'm just afraid of those ticket prices. Yeah.
I know. Now with a kid, it's a thousand times harder. But like when we would go to New York, that was always like a nice excuse to go.
Me too. I guess the last one I saw, and I hadn't seen it before, was Book of Mormon, and I loved it.
Oh, that's so good. It's so good, right? It's amazing.
I did see that one.
I mean, I think my top ones are like Assassins, Chicago's great.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the way it's kind of this seamless, because it's a collection of Broadway vignettes, but tells this kind of overarching story and is also satirical. I love Chicago.
Have you seen... Do you love the movie too?
I love the movie. I love it.
Yeah.
I really love it. And it was the only thing that I think honestly kind of improved on the source material. Mm. I think that it was one of the few movies that I think is arguably as good, if not better, than the Broadway show. Hamilton. And then, I mean, it's so primal for me. It's. Because there are shows that I don't love that there are songs I love, or there are shows that I've loved for so long that, like, objectively I could say there are problems with them, but I also love them. I mean, I love this show, The Wild Party, by Michael John Lacusa.
I don't know it.
It's so great. I mean, I do think if you cut 15 minutes out of it, it would be a literal perfect musical. A little bit shaggy.
Do you have a dream one that you'd be in? Our dream role. You know his name?
Probably. I mean, anything in Assassins, male or female. I think some of the male roles are still better in musical theater. The female roles still haven't evened out, and Sondheim has made a dent in that. But I think there's nowhere. I don't think the male gaze is anywhere like more palpable than musical theater, actually, because it is so overwhelmingly male, and a lot of the songs I liked as a kid, they are strong female songs, but, like, you can just tell a dude's writing them, and, like, it just sometimes is more... Sondheim writes women very well. I mean, incredibly, incredibly well. So that's actually an exception. But, so a lot of those roles are I would like to play male roles. I mean, I always say Harold Hill in The Music Man. But I would love to play Dot in Sunday in the Park with George. I'd love to play Squeaky in Assassins. I would love to play Mama Rose in Gypsy. Yeah.
Are there, we've talked over everything practically. Is there one that you want to point out, like a favorite that we haven't really talked about?
On this album?
Yeah. Boy, there's a lot of dialogue in this one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They basically, to give you context, put the whole scene on the album.
Gotcha.
Which is why I couldn't recognize it, because I'm never like, yeah, I want to rock out to this scene. Yeah. I think the gun song is amazing in Assassins. It's really, we already listened to it, but it's amazing. So this is sung by Leon Czolgosz, who assassinated McKinley.
It takes a lot of men to make a gun. Hundreds, many men to make a gun. Men in the mines to dig the iron. Men in the
And he was influenced by the anarchist, communist anarchist Emma Goldman, and really was one of those assassins who had like a cause, which is, you know, so all you have to do is move your little finger. It's about you can change the world. It's such a good song.
Move your little finger, move your little finger, and you can change the world. Why should you be blue when you've your little finger? Prove how just a little finger can change the world.
What a wonder is
I like this musical because it has some very complex themes and also political arguments of what is the American dream? Are these, you know, kind of heroifying villains, I think is very interesting. With general political theater, I don't like stuff that's just like mindlessly liberal because you're, chances are you're doing it in New York City. Mm-hmm. You're just preaching to the choir. Yeah. So I think that political comedy, I think, takes a lot of skill. I mean, obviously, it's different if you're doing something that's very, very, like, pro-gun control or pro-abortion and you're somewhere, like, you know, a red part of the South, right? But the context is kind of everything. Of course, but, like, yeah. I got a little tired of being in school and hearing people make, like, politically aware stuff that just wasn't saying anything revolutionary to the people watching it. It just isn't radical or subversive to say something that everyone's gonna cheer and already believes. I try to always, and this is like a very female thing and also a very like people pleasing thing, I try to picture like the other side. I try to picture like, okay, is this, if a conservative person or anyone who didn't believe in this were listening to it, would this make a valid case?
Yeah.
Because that's, I think, what the ultimate goal of art or political art is, or any art, is to make a case for something the person hadn't considered. And so if you're just kind of saying the thing that you just want to kind of get like applause and snaps from everyone who agrees with you, I'm not particularly interested in that.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, I mean, it's just, this is obvious because of the subject matter, but it's such a dangerous musical to make, or just, it's so risky.
Yeah.
As a shot rings out in my ears. But, like, to actually get, to choose to make a musical about this, I think is really courageous.
And to not just demonize them.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean.
Because I've been noticing this lately, and I can't tell if it's like these stories need to be told or whatever, but, like, there's a slew of movies of just about these like terrible men. Like there's a Roger Ailes movie coming out and there was like Paterno and Vice and all these movies about these fucking pieces of shit men and that don't celebrate them, but there's still movies being made about them and their stories and it feels easy.
They don't elevate the debate at all. Yeah. They don't illuminate anything.
Exactly. Like, yeah. So I go back and forth where I'm like,
do you feel like this demands
to be made? Yeah.
To be made. Yeah. I think that's a high bar.
Of those, though. Like, and that's why I think Assassins is different, though. Like, there is something. There's an interesting take on it, and it doesn't. Even though it is controversial, it doesn't feel. It does allow you to see A little bit. I don't even know if it's like their perspective, really, because it's such historical fiction in there and a lot, like, although I believe all the Oswald stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Sondheim, oh, that he really saw all of the murderers.
All of the murderers came forward and stopped him from committing suicide.
I mean, I think that what Sondheim is
great
at doing is taking a very kind of like, not cheery art form, because there are obviously some dramatic musicals before him, but an unnuanced art form at times, and bringing a modern darkness and kind of inward looking self-hatred to things. And I mean, Sondheim as a person is known to like hate himself. From various people who know him, he's a very difficult person to know and to be friends with. His mother was severely mentally ill, said to him, like, my one regret in life is giving you birth or whatever, which is why he really is good at writing controlling and, like, very flawed women, but understanding where they're coming from, because it's his mother.
That's fascinating.
But, like, my friend recognized him at a play many years ago and was like, oh, my God, you're Stephen Sondheim. And he went, yeah, you want a fucking cookie? He was like a fucking asshole.
Jesus. Yes, I do want a cookie. Sondheim was working at the
refreshments. Do you want a cookie? No, I'm working. Aw.
Poor guy.
Who'd want to kill a man of goodwill like
I went to the Tonys a couple years ago and I wore a shirt of Sondheim smoking a joint because everyone thinks Sondheim's God. Like, people literally talk about it in musical theater now, like, he's God. But he's a... like an alcoholic stoner. he is, and no one ever talks about that's what he is. It's all this deification of, oh, but no, he's an alcoholic. He's a self-hating alcoholic stoner. And so I wore the shirt of him smoking a blunt, and I was at the post-Tony party, and I ran into some people who knew him. They were like, oh, I think Steve might like that shirt. And I was like, really? Like, I would love to smoke a joint with Stephen Sondheim. And they went, that's very possible. And they had emailed me, and they were like, oh, we're going to show Steve your shirt. And I was like, do me a favor. If he doesn't like the shirt, literally just never email me back. And they never emailed me.
Oh, no.
Now, it was right around the time Neil Patrick Harris shaded me. And so I think maybe it was everyone just got distracted because there was this whole thing where Neil Patrick Harris shaded me that happened at the Tony Awards. It was kind of the big talk of the Tony Awards a couple years ago.
I remember that. I think I do remember that.
But anyway, I live in a little bit of fear that Sondheim didn't like my shirt. Which, I get it, but also, you're a stoner, come on. Like, you've written about being
also
a stoner.
Also, have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But also, he doesn't, he seems to not like himself, so.
Yeah.
I just want to give him a hug.
That's fair.
Maybe the angle is
he's like
wrong.
A 90-year-old,
yeah.
He's a 90-year-old, like, genius. He does not need me to give him a hug.
And never meet your heroes.
You know what? I did meet Michael John Lacusa, who wrote that show, The Wild Party, that I talked about, and I directed that show in college. It's how much I love it. And he loves Crazy Ex and loves my work. And we fucking had a love fest, and it was one of the most gratifying things that's ever
meet
happened.
Meet your heroes!
Meet a hero!
It was actually unbelievable. So anyone out there, Michael John Lacusa, what a gem of a man.
Well, we should go into
A segment that I forgot to tell you about. That's called What Did We Learn Today?
Oh.
Where we just go around and we say something we learned. It could be something you learned about Joel or I, something about the musical, something about yourself. It can be so basic. It can be that you didn't know I was from LA or whatever.
I didn't know that you were I didn't know Deborah was a Sephardic Jew.
I didn't know to stay in your bed or stay just on the side of it. During an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
I also learned that John Lacusa. Michael John Lacusa is a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like hearing that.
You would be queen to me, not wife.
I didn't know that. Even though I wrote your bio, that was when I first. I didn't know you were from Manhattan Beach.
Yeah.
I did not know you were from LA.
What high school did you go to?
It's a very small school called Landmark in Encino. It's called Westmark now.
I just met someone who also went there.
Really? It's a school for kids with learning disabilities. I started at Marlboro, which I hated.
Okay.
And then switched over there because that's when I realized I had learning disabilities.
It's interesting how being like getting like a diagnosis has made you infinitely more self-aware.
Yes.
And smarter about yourself than most people in the world.
Yes.
Like, you know exactly how you learn, and you're like, oh yeah, this is what happens, and it
totally
seems to, like, raise your intelligence.
It does, and that comes from growing up in privilege.
Oh.
Because I was able to have the test that needed to be done and then go to a school.
Right.
That helped, and I was very, 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 very lucky to be able to, because it wasn't a public school, so I was able to get the help that I needed where... But yeah,
well,
100%,
then go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You privileged piece of shit.
Well, I have to acknowledge that
that's really,
it is,
that's
like,
very smart.
I think there's a lot of people with such undiagnosed, I guess with mm-hmm. everything, anytime we can be aware of it, it's great.
Oh, the fact that I just spent a long time talking about, like, my amazing public high school theater program. Yeah, that's fucking, I mean,
everything is. I mean, my life.
I reek of
privilege.
I went to school for musical and experimental theater. Like, what am I doing? Yeah.
We're lucky people.
We're very lucky people.
We're lucky people.
Rachel Bloom is a fucking lucky person, an actress, singer, songwriter, writer, and comedian hailing from Manhattan Beach, California. She created and starred in the hit TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, all episodes available on Netflix, and stars in the movie Most Likely to Murder. Rachel Bloom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This was a blast. Thanks for listening to this particular album. It's very, very important to me. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at This Particular Album. Follow us on Twitter at Particular Album. The show is produced by me, Deborah Tarica, Ryan Middledorf, and everyone at Campfire Media. Artwork by James Mulholland. Music by me, Joel Spence. See you next time.
Campfire.
Hi folks, Sean Watkins here. I'm here to tell you about my podcast / album called This Is Who We Are. That's right, it's a podcast and a record, all rolled into one. Each episode features one song off the record paired up with a conversation with a guest who is related to that song in some way. Guests include Jackson Browne, Inara George, Kate Micucci, and the conversations aren't about these songs specifically. The songs just serve as sort of a topical springboard that hopefully will lend a little context to this new album of mine. Sort of like a modern-day version of Liner Notes, only much more personal. The podcast and the album are both called This Is Who We Are. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts.